Well, hello and welcome everyone to our last Q&A call for the Think Pink and Grow Rich program. Sniff, sniff. Chris and I are both here, and we're both sad that it's our last call, but there's a part of us that's really happy because we've been hearing from you, and you've been emailing us and telling us how much you've gotten out of the program, and that means so much to us. So thank you so much for sending in, you know, your testimonials and your successes. I mean, that's probably the most exciting part is when we see people having aha moments and insights to the stuff that we teach and then taking action on it and seeing results in their life and their business. So thank you so much for sending up, sending all that in, because that really helps us validate the program. So I guess that being said, we should probably just open the lines up for questions. Do you have anything you want to say before that?
Well, really the same thing. As all of you know, because you've had some experience with us now, the reason we do this is because it's our mission here, it's our calling here to help you all move forward, so it's great to hear that people are doing well. So, and we said this in the beginning, but thanks for your trust in us and investing in yourself and investing in your business, but more than anything, choosing to make that investment with us, we really appreciate it.
Okay. So if you have a question, just go ahead and hit star six on your phone, and that will unmute your line. Star six.
Nobody and Nancy, Chris, this is Iva.
Hi, Iva.
Hi, Iva.
Hi. I got a question. How do you know how many people open up your emails? Like what you said in the one about the emails, you said like if you sent have a email distribution list of 5,000, if 600 or 700 open up. So I was wondering, like, how do you know that?
Well, we have an email system.
Uh-huh.
And I know Constant Contact does this as well. If you use a Mary Kay specific email system, you might ask them how to do it. But the email systems, if you're sending your email out through an online system, it will track your open rate.
Okay. Like, I have a distribution, you know, Mary Kay, we've got the e-cards that we can send out, like, you know, to all my unit members or so forth. But then, like, I send my emails out through Comcast. I have a distribution list. So I guess what I could I call, I guess I could call Comcast and ask them.
I would ask them if they, mm-hmm. if they track open rates. Mm-hmm. They also track something called click-throughs, meaning if in your email you have a link to anything, it'll also show you the number of people who clicked through on a link. And some programs will even show you who clicked through on a link.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that we used Constant Contact. Excuse me. We used One Shopping Cart, and now we use something called Infusionsoft. And all three of those programs track how many people open your emails.
I see. Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Great information to have.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. One thing that we like to do is we test our subject lines to see, you know, what subject lines tend to have people respond the most. So it sort of guides us. We look at our open rate on, you know, a certain list of emails, and we can see which ones were people responded better to. So it helps us going forward to know what to put in the subject line. Okay, next question. Just go ahead and hit star six.
Hi, this is Mary Beth. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi. I really appreciated the email that you sent out today about how you do this is how you do anything and did I fall behind and yada, yada. And it's true. I realized after reading this, and yeah, it was sort of a punch in the gut, yeah, I did fall behind. Yeah, I didn't get everything done. And I do better, and obviously this duh moment I should have realized earlier, when I came to your two-day session that you had here in Indy. I don't know if I'm not able to focus for long periods of time, but I would see, okay, now tonight there's another call. No, I can't do it tonight. I'll have to get on it tomorrow, and then something would come up. But if I pay to be in your space, by golly, I'm going to be there. So it was a kick in the gut, but I'm glad you sent out that message.
Well, thanks. I am glad I sent it out too. I think the thing that you're referring to is the difference between a short-term commitment and a long-term commitment. So a long-term commitment is always more difficult to keep, because when you make the commitment, you're usually in the energy and the space of excitement and enthusiasm and, yes, this is what I really want, and you're just totally committed. Seeing that commitment through for 6 months is not an easy thing to do. But so you missed some calls, you didn't listen to everything after the fact like you said you were going to. But Mary Beth, the one thing I want you to realize is that you're on the last Q&A call.
I know, it was just pretty pathetic because I missed so many of them all.
Okay, so I wasn't going for pathetic.
Well, I am.
So Mary Beth, what do you find yourself consistently not getting to? What's the consistent thing that you resist doing?
Oh, goodness. Many different things. And this is not a therapy session, so we won't go there. But, no, I was really excited back when I first signed up, and then, you know, the unit fell apart and I stepped down from being a director, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try this again, because you guys graciously said, okay, go ahead and try it again. And I was on for a while, and then life happened, and I just would say, okay, I'll catch up. And the further behind I get, the harder it is to play catch up. So I need to admit to myself that I do better with short-term things like your two-day sessions and committing to do that. And I was thinking, as I had this realization, that the 50 faces in 50 days, that is a goal that I can do, because I can mark that on the calendar. It's a specific goal for a specific, it's less than 2 months. I can do this. You know, so obviously I need to cut myself chunks of time that are controllable for me.
Yeah, we are coming back to Indy also. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm going to try and line up a sitter to come. Are you full yet?
I don't think it's full just yet, but I know that we're down there. We're going to be doing your fall retreat. So if you enjoy it, it'll be new content, so make sure you don't miss it.
Okay.
I guess the thing, you know, we won't get into the personal side because we're on a group call, but what I would look at is, what is it that you're consistently, try to find out where it is you're consistently stopping. What's that point? What's that thing you've been resisting doing? And then typically it usually has something to do with calls, and it usually has something to do with bookings and that kind of stuff, and being consistent with bookings. At least that's what we see a lot. So where do you make your booking calls from, Mary Beth?
The kitchen.
Yeah, it happens in your kitchen.
Right.
Do you decide who you're going to call the night before?
I look at my list of people, and I decide who I can get during the time frame that I have available to call.
Yeah. I guess all I'm saying is find a way to make that as convenient as possible.
Okay.
I read something this week that was, I thought was really profound. It talked about this theory called, they called it activation energy. In other words, how much energy does it take to start the task? Because 9 times out of 10, once we start the task, we'll actually continue and we'll complete the task. So the factor, and they've studied this and done research on it, the factor that makes the determination as to whether or not somebody does something is the amount of seconds that it takes them to activate themselves to doing it. It should take you less than 20 seconds. So, for example, if a guy wants to play his guitar every day and practice, and his guitar is in his closet in his bedroom, if it takes him longer than 20 seconds to get to his bedroom and get to his closet and get his guitar out, he's not going to practice. But if he takes his guitar and he puts it in the middle of his living room, the likelihood that he'll actually practice for the 21 straight days that it takes to form the habit goes up like 65%.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, whatever those habits are that you're not building, just try to set yourself up so that it's as convenient as possible to make those calls. Decide who you're going to call already. Put the phone in a spot where you don't even have to get up out of your chair. If you spend more time in your living room, put your leads in your living room. Put them next to the couch. Call a couple people on the commercials if you're watching TV, that kind of stuff, and you'll find that your activity will go up.
Okay.
And coming back to what I was saying, Mary Beth, I wasn't saying that it's pathetic that you're on the last Q&A.
I am. No, you didn't say it. I did.
I was actually trying to say, at least you're on the call and you're seeing it through in the fact that you're fessing up and saying, okay, I realized what I did. I blew it. I think a lot of people who kind of hit and missed through the program are nowhere near this call. We had 63 people in this program when it started. We've had, you know, in the last month, and I realize summer and seminar play into it, we've had maybe 20 people on the calls. So where are those 40 people? They're MIA at this point. They've started hiding from our emails, number one. They're not opening them and reading them like you did today. They're not on this call. They're not asking for help. They're not fessing up to what their challenges are. So I just want you to give yourself credit for getting on the call. And if you've learned that you're better at short-term commitments, then just start making a lot more short-term commitments.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Mary Beth.
We'll see you in Indy.
Okay, so do I star 6 to go back out mute?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Hi, this is Gail. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, you gave us several resources during the course, books to read, and I was just wondering which one would best to start with, and I'm thinking you're going to say, well, it depends on what you need the most help with, but let's say all things are equal. I'm thinking probably the one we talked about Tuesday, Finding Your Own North Star, would be the best one to start. Do you agree, or do you have another suggestion?
Well, the only reason I'm going to say the one that I'm going to say is because in the past week we have had 3 coaching clients tell us that they are reading this book, whether we gave it to them or we recommended it, and they said they cannot put this book down. So this is why Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the Secrets of the Millionaire Mind book.
Right, yeah, I've read that one. That is good, yeah.
Okay, so you read it. That would have been my first recommendation.
Right. So well, maybe I should start by reading it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say maybe I should start by reading it again first.
I'll tell you, I've read that book.
The favorite for me, the one that had the really – I have 2 that had the most profound impact on me, and one was The Success Principles by Jack Canfield.
Okay.
It's like a Bible of success secrets. I loved it, and it reads in a way that if you don't have a lot of time to read, I think there's 160 or something principles in that. There's 62, and each of them are a few pages. So read, you know, one section.
It's a great bathroom book.
It's a, you know. But it's so much better than a bathroom. It was the fact that I'm here was because I read that book.
Oh, wow, that is pretty profound.
No, truly. Yeah. That book was my inspiration to start a coaching business with Nancy. That's the book that moved me. The other book that moved me in a really profound way was Robert Russell's God Works Through Faith.
God Works what? It cut out a little bit.
Yeah, God Works Through Faith.
Okay. All right.
It's a short book. It was written a really long time ago, and it's a book about the power of faith in our life. And it's so darn profound when it comes to the reading of, and it drills into your mind that all things are possible if you have faith.
Mm-hmm.
and that where we drop the ball is where we lose our faith from moment to moment. Or it's not that we lose faith, it's that we put faith in the bad outcome.
Right.
It's still faith, but it's faith in the wrong thing. And I would that you read that book multiple times. It's something that it's in paperback form. You might only be able to get it in a downloadable copy because it was written so long ago.
Okay.
But it was such a tremendous gift, and it was when I was reading that book that Nancy and I had our first ever six-figure month.
Oh, my. Wow.
And I had that book like a Bible every single night because we had set a really tremendous goal in our, and there were moments where I didn't think it was going to happen and I was starting to lose faith, and that book kept me on track.
That I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is what will keep us on track. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
It's like a success Bible, and it's very faith driven. And, again, really easy to read, and life-changing information, truly.
Great. I appreciate that, because we hadn't talked about that one that I recall anyway.
I don't think we have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. I've even thought about, and I don't even know that I've told Nancy this, I've thought about doing my own program just on that book.
Well, you know what? I was thinking, well, this might be a good Bible study book, too. I don't know.
It's just a book that I'd love to just set up a three-month group coaching program on the secrets and the gifts that are in that book and the learning that we can take from that book and an interpretation of that book and how it applies to business.
Yeah. You might have hit on something there. Yeah.
Yeah, so go get
that.
Everybody on the call, really, go grab that. Let me make sure that I have the right author, Robert Russell. But
It is. I called it up. Yeah,
that's it. Robert A. Russell.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, thank you so much.
You're
welcome. Since we have a bit of a pause right now, I think what I'm going to do is read a few questions that we got by email. So this person wrote in, if it can take 7 contacts to make a connection, we should not give up on a lead until 7 tries, right? Does it matter whether it's in the same week, spread out over 2 weeks, or over a longer time span? Do you want to take the first crack at that?
I personally don't think that I would call a person 7 different times. I would probably stop at, I'd probably stop at 5. That's just me. 5 to 6. I don't know. It's really difficult. It really depends so much on where the lead came from. I think where it came from. If I'm getting no answer, no answer, no answer, no answer, no answer, I mean, I basically will give up. I mean, that's just me. You also ask questions about, now that bear in mind, and we've shared the statistics, I think, on these calls, that 81% of all sales happen on or after the 5th touch to a person. So if you're calling and calling and calling and you're not getting any answer, I would be switching the way of which I was trying to touch that person. I'd be moving from phone to email and email to text. I might even go phone to text, because people go to text messages right away.
Or direct mail.
Or you can do a direct mail piece to a person. So it's changing and becoming a little bit more creative in how you're reaching out and touching that person. That's my opinion, and I'm sure a lot of people could debate on it. But I would just say, hear this and use what resonates with you.
I would say, I would do 7 times, but I would use multiple touches,
right.
So meaning mix up the way that you're trying
to
reach them. And then what I would do is after that, automate my follow-up with the person. So if Chris and I have tried to get in touch with someone, let's say they're interested in our services, and we call them once, twice, maybe 3 times, we might send them something in the mail, but we would definitely put them on our email list. And so forever, until they unsubscribe, they would receive our email newsletter. And so who knows? I mean, a year from now, they might be needing our services and being ready to hire us, whereas a year before they weren't. And now they've been on our email list, they've seen our information, and maybe they contact us or we, you know, run a telecourse and they sign up for it. So that's what I would do, is I would decide on how many times I was going to reach out to them and what ways I was going to reach out to them. And then after I didn't hear back, I would put them on automated follow-up. The second question is, I know sales directors are divided on this next question, to leave a message or not when you call. So where does two of you stand on this issue? If you call and get no answer, do you turn right around and leave a message? So our thought process is this. If we're calling for sales, if it's a sales call, if we're following up with someone that's a lead, we do not leave a phone call the first time we call them.
Don't leave a message.
I'm sorry, we don't leave a message the first time that we call them. We would call back two or three times. And usually on the third call, if we haven't heard, they haven't answered, then we leave a message and just let them know we've been trying to get a hold of them. The reason we do this is a couple reasons. One, if you call a person and you leave a message the first time, now it's up to them to call you back. The ball is in their court, and you will likely wait forever. So then you think, okay, I left a message on Monday. Is it obnoxious to call and leave a message again today? Should I call them on Friday? Is next week too pushy? If you don't leave a message, it's almost like you're expected to call back. The other reason we do it is because if your phone number shows up on that person's phone a couple times in a row and they don't recognize it or they don't recognize the name, they'll get curious. By the time they see it a third time, they're going to think, I wonder who this is, and they may answer it. That just happened to Chris the other day. He saw a number pop up a couple times that he didn't know, and he decided to answer it. I don't remember if it was a telemarketer or not. But, yeah, it was. So it was a telemarketer. So that's why we don't leave messages. Now, if it's a customer service call, like if I want to call all my customers and let them know about a special or ask them if they need anything, I would certainly go ahead and leave a message. But when it's sales-related, we don't leave a message. We keep in control of the process, and we call them back at different times to try and catch them. Anything else?
No, that's it. That's exactly it. We have a process for it. I mean, we've done both. We've left messages and tracked who calls back. Typically, we don't get a call back when we leave a message, so we don't feel like we're hurting our chances by not leaving messages, because it's so rare that somebody actually calls you back when you're making a sales call. So that's definitely our take on it. What Nancy said is so important. Just change the way that you're reaching out to them. That makes all a world of difference.
Okay. So if anyone else has a question, go ahead and hit star six.
Hey, Nancy and Chris, this is Iva.
Hi, Iva.
Someone asked about, like, calling how many times, and I liked what you said about seven times, because in Mary Kay, I'm old school, but the thing is that we repeat seven times at your second appointment before someone really believes they're going to have a second appointment. And I know even listening to tapes, if I listen to tapes like seven times, you know, just repetition. And I one time heard someone say this, and I haven't done this, but I think it would be great to try, or for the ones on there on the call here tonight. Like, if you have someone, let's say, for instance, that you're trying to recruit, and if you sent something, like I liked how you said different touch points, because you could do seven different times of corresponding or being in contact with that person. You could probably find a story that reminds you of her situation, and you could just write a note on there and just, you know, say, Susie, I thought this might be of interest, or I thought about you when I read this. I think you'd be great. Or I was at my meeting tonight, and I was just thinking how much fun it would have been to have had you there, you know. I just really can see how Mary Kay might benefit you. But if you had, like, seven different ways, you know, you could leave a message or, you know, have the invite them to something. But seven times, because after seven times, then the person's going like, oh, okay, you know. So anyway, I'm not one. My thing is that I don't, one or two or three times, guess what? I kind of move on. But you know, a person that is a national sales director that had a business, she said that, and it really has always stuck with me. And so I have just had where I've done lots of interviews, and, of course, we know it's layering. So the thing is that, you know, I've got each person's name on a sheet of paper in a notebook, and I am going to do more follow-up and, you know, send out notes or emails or, you know, just a postcard or something like that. So I thought I'd pass that on to the other Mary Kay gals here on the call tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree. Here's the thing I struggle with. I struggle with the thought that I was taught by one man who was, by the way, one of the most extremely successful salesmen ever. Mm-hmm. He said there's no one you can't get in front of if you're willing to be persistent enough. And I struggled with that and managing all the follow-up. So
yeah,
it was my struggle. So I knew if I was this is when I was selling to CEOs of companies, so, you know, these were big contracts for me if I could get a meeting with these people. Mm-hmm. So I struggled with that persistence thought, like there's no one I can't get in front of, and how do I manage the follow-up to all these people?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really doing prospecting at the level you should be, at some point you've got a lot of people to follow up with. That's why at some point you have to automate your follow-up, because you can't possibly follow up with leads from 6 months ago and still juggle the new ones that you get. So there's got to be some sort of sequence where you, let's say, touch all new people 7 times in 7 different ways, and then you put them in some sort of automated sequence. Otherwise, I just don't know how you'd keep up with it.
No, I agree. Like, you know, 7 times and then just, you know, even if you want to just check back every 6 months or something, has anything changed,
yeah,
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the more creative you are, I think the more success you have. You kind of have to, no matter how you're reaching people, whether it's phone, email, direct mail, you have to cut through the clutter nowadays.
Right.
People are inundated. So you really have to stand out. A postcard in the mail isn't going to do it anymore. People sift their mail over the garbage.
I do think if it's handwritten, though, don't you think if it's handwritten?
I think handwritten and sealed.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I think like a card in an envelope is much more likely to get opened and read than a postcard. Because a postcard, they'll just flip to the front and see what it is. And if it says Mary Kay and they think they're not interested, they won't even read the message.
Mm-hmm.
But a greeting card, they're going to open it, they're going to look at it, they're going to read it. You could have a free sample in it.
Yeah, and if you can send something bulky, something bulky
always
gets open.
Now, I'm saying this, I'm also talking about recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, you know, just you know, as far as on that. So, yeah, I like that idea too, bulky, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of Dan Kennedy when I think about bulky. He was trying to get us to come to his, he's a sort of an in-your-face type marketing guru, multimillionaire, and he was having his information summit, which is like a $3,000 ticket, a couple days of hardcore marketing strategies and, you know, in-your-face type marketing. And he sent us a bulk letter in the mail that had an army man in it, and then he sent us, it had an army man in it. And
yeah,
there
a little green army man.
And there was
then he sent in a tube a rolled up wanted poster and a bullet inside
it. And it had a brass bullet in it. And
the
it was
wanted
a tube.
The wanted person was us.
Yeah,
and
you're wanted.
Yeah, and he made an imprint. And the thing is, yeah, if you think about recruiters, like I've heard of coaches, you know, when they're recruiting someone, they send a stick of gum, I'm sticking with you, or, you know.
Right.
Or coaches go and they put the kids' name on their chest and they get in the living room and rip off their shirt and have their name on their chest. I mean, you know, sometimes you got to do something to kind of stand out a little bit, like you're talking about there.
When we were doing the call reluctance workshop, we had an idea to send a cell phone in the mail, a prepaid cell phone with our number programmed into it and a letter on it that said, "Are you call reluctant?"
Oh, my gosh.
Serious, because that would get so opened in a heartbeat, and that's the kind of stuff that got us gigs.
Yeah. So you got to be creative and
courageous. Be courageous.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to stand out.
Yeah.
We had a meeting with a million-dollar director who didn't know us at all. She'd heard about us but didn't know us, and she had to meet with us with her little girl. She had her daughter with her. So we had this meeting, you know, at a restaurant with her little girl, and her, we remember her little girl had gotten a chocolate chip cookie that had M&Ms on it, and so she was so excited about the M&Ms. And so when we sent her a package afterwards to kind of encourage her to book us for the call reluctance workshop, we sent her a lot of different things in there, a lot of fun things, but we made sure that we sent a cookie with M&Ms on it because we knew and we remembered her daughter's name and we remembered how much she loved cookies. And she was so impressed by that. She called us up and she goes, like, you guys know what you're doing.
She said, you have raised the bar. That's what she said. And so, but that's the type of thing that what we have to realize is that when – especially in the business that all of you are in, I'm speaking to you, and I'm speaking to everybody that's in any direct sales company, and you know, we happen to be working with Mary Kay. But that being said, people are coming to you for growth and for development. I mean, that's a significant part of it. They're coming to you and coming to Mary Kay because they think that when they do, their life is going to be better in some way. So one of the things that we want to make sure that we're leaving, and we have been talking so much about this because our coach has been covering it in his training programs, it's knowing how to create what's called the impression of increase. And the impression of increase is having yourself positioned in a way that every time you enter a room or anybody interacts or gets something from you, they are absolutely convinced that if they interact with you, their life is going to be better, and they're going to experience some sort of increase from your experience. So when we talk about being bold or being different or doing something to stand out, if you don't do that, the unconscious message that you're sending to your potential recruits is that she is like me, and because she is like me, she might not be able to help me. So you want to make sure that you entertain that. I'm not saying don't connect with your people, but make sure that you're leaving them with the impression of increase. And that's another, you know, I'm going off a tangent here.
Yeah, it's got me kind of thinking about how you do that.
How you do it is presenting yourself in a confident way, presenting yourself in a unique way, presenting yourself.
Sending something impressive.
Send something impressive. Don't go halfway. Go over the top. Go for wow factor rather than what's typical, because you're sending an unconscious message that you are typical.
Well, you know, there's this thing on the internet that I've thought about, which has just now got me thinking here of like, it's really cute strawberries. It's called Berry Something. But if you had a great hostess, what if you send her a thank you with sending her a dozen chocolate covered strawberries?
Absolutely.
That would be incredible.
It would blow her mind.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever done that before. So it would blow her mind.
I remember when I was a state queen and I got chocolate chip cookies in the form of roses, you know? The thing is, and it was in a big white box with a big red bow on it, and I can still remember how special that was I got from the company. And the thing is, I never ate those cookies. I mean, they just got old, but because they were so special, you know. So, when we can do things like that for people we come into contact with.
Here's a perfect example. Chris and I were out of town at a conference, and we did some consultations on site with women business owners who might want to hire us as coaches. When we came home, we sent out packages to them just to thank them for their time at this conference, because they took time out of the conference to sit down with us. So we sent them some amazing salted sea caramels with just a nice note saying, thank you, if there's ever anything you need, here's our contact information. Those people that, one, started to avoid our calls, called us right away when she got that package in the mail to thank us. So it's just, you know, nobody's ever done that before for them. Nobody's ever said thank you for your time. Even if we never hear from them again, it's still something that you do that you stand out in their mind, and you leave them with a great impression.
And the one person, we ended up with one person that ended up in a significant size contract with us. And the first thing that she said to me when I got her on the phone to talk with her about this contract that she wanted to do with us, she said, I had just moved And the gift that came from you guys was the first gift I got in my new house.
Mm.
And she said, and I see that as a sign of things to come.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, and it's also important, I mean, again, for us being in the beauty business, that we look the part every day when we go out, you know.
Yeah.
Because we're selling ourselves. So, I mean, about the time that I run to the grocery store and if I don't have makeup on, you know, I find someone and I want to hide in the tomatoes. So, I mean, it's just really important, you know.
Right. And here's another thing for everybody to read since we're on resources. Go out and get the book, The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles.
Oh, that was a download they got.
You already have the download. Read chapter 14. Chapter 14 of The Science of Getting Rich. And it's on the impression of increase. And I'll tell you, there's no one thing, in my opinion, that you have to be absolutely certain that you're conveying during a recruiting conversation than the impression of increase.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unconscious things that you end up communicating. If you're not prepared, if you don't know what direction to take the presentation, if you don't know what to ask, if you get choked up and you start sputtering, especially when you quote the $99 investment, or if the same thing happens when you're asking your consultants
about inventory,
you know, their first inventory order. All of those things send an unconscious message of unsureness, and they'll create unsureness in your prospects and unsureness in your consultants who are buying their inventory. So really read that. I would suggest everybody read that chapter and ask yourself, am I leaving, am I conveying this impression of increase? And then one of the things that you can absolutely do that I highly recommend in order to help yourself with this is record a recruiting conversation and record an inventory conversation so you can step outside of yourself and listen so that you can actually experience yourself. What are you saying? What are you conveying? Where are there huge pauses in your voice? Where are you sighing? Where are you unsure? Where is that showing up in your language? Where is it showing up in your tone of voice? And typically, we're not conscious of when these things are happening. So really record those and listen to them.
Great idea.
Yeah, I promise you, everybody on the line, you will learn so much from just recording yourself. And read impression of increase, get that into your head, and then record yourself and listen to it back. And then you'll be able to critique yourself as to where you're not leaving that impression. Because what ends up happening is you end up with a person that says no, and you end up walking away going, I'm not sure why I didn't get that one. Have you ever had one like that, Iva?
All the time.
Yeah, it's impression of increase.
Yeah.
Because there's a message that's being conveyed that's unconscious. And sometimes it's body language. Sometimes it's typically tonality.
Uh-huh.
Tonality is huge. You'll sputter a little bit when you quote the price, or your tone goes down, or you don't quote it confidently, or you give in to their story. And typically their story is part of what has them stuck.
And the other thing I'm thinking too, I'm just thinking a lot, is we used to teach a lot of eye contact. You know, that's part of Mary Kay's philosophy, right eye to right eye, you know, not directly at a person. But, you know, just thinking that we get so darn busy, or I guess I'm speaking for myself, and, you know, just even taking time to have eye contact with someone.
Yeah, look them straight in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, a little bit of a rant, but.
Yeah, we got off on it. I'm going to mute, let someone else in. Okay, thank you.
I just want to mention that The Science of Getting Rich is a book that we sent out as a download, because you can get it right off the web. We would have sent it out around the emails that went out after the fifth call, which was the financial blueprint call. So if you still have the emails, I would look at the calls that went out after the financial blueprint call, and you should find The Science of Getting Rich. in those downloads. If you don't, you can either contact us and ask us for it, or you can just go online, Google The Science of Getting Rich, and you'll find it as a free downloadable ebook. And then the chapter that Chris recommended be read is chapter 14, called The Impression of Increase.
I have one other question before I unmute. Like, you know, there's a couple calls that I have not listened to yet. How long are those calls going to be available? I mean, I've saved all the emails and stuff, and I haven't taken time to.
They're gonna be up for about another month.
Okay.
As we mentioned on Tuesday's call, we are going to create a boxed program from this that, you know, has all the calls on CDs and workbooks, possibly the transcripts, that we're going to offer to the group here, you know, on these calls.
Okay.
First and foremost at a special rate, and then we'll offer it to our entire Mary Kay list, and at that point the downloads will come down.
I see. Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, we're going to box it up and
make it a physical
product
program.
So if you want the repetition, you can listen to it in your car, put it on CDs, that kind of thing. We're gonna have a CD set for it.
Okay, that'll be great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, guys. This is Karina, and I'm here in Virginia Beach. So I just thought I would quickly ask a question.
Yeah, we were wondering where you were.
I am here. You know, it's one of those things where just sitting here is tearing me apart. My family's having dinner. I'm taking my whole, two days away to do this, and I keep thinking, you know, there's got to be short-term sacrifice for long-term gain. That's what I keep saying. I said, Mommy's going to get her car real soon, guys. But my question, I guess I have two. One is logistical. I did not have that second private session. I'd still love to be able to do that. Is that still possible?
Can you send us an email? Send us an email. Our calendars are really booked in August. I mean, like crazy booked. If we're able to fit you in, it would probably not be till the beginning of September.
Okay.
And frankly, the reason for that is we have a 10-day, we leave for 10 days next week on a camping trip. So that's one of the reasons for the delay. And what's happened is all of our current coaching clients, one-on-one clients, we're trying to squeeze everybody in for multiple calls before we leave. So that's why we have calendars that are absolutely, they're kind of ridiculous for them, but when we get back, it'll be a little bit more opened up.
Okay, great. My question, I guess, is really related to money management, the financial blueprint. In thinking about my particular situation, I think, really I can see very clearly where my ingrained notions, just that whole lack has really created a lot of scenarios. But how do I really work at the money management piece? Because I feel like once all these other things are in place, you know, that in my particular situation, I've been working a lot on myself. So I think I'm getting there. But it comes down to either like lack of money management, or because that's where I'm at. I feel like, you know, even if I'm in the same place 3 years into my business that I was when I first started, and I feel like there's no money coming back to my family, then I know it's something I'm not doing right. So aside from, you know, I don't know, getting a personal like coach with just money management, what other things do you suggest would be like priorities?
The first thing that I'm going to say, and I know Nancy's going to go the money management route, like, you know, the jars, I'm guessing, and it's totally accurate, and I love it. But, Karina, you have to remember this. You don't have a money problem. You have an asking problem.
No, I have no problem selling. I have no problem asking. I just realized that I'm putting all my money back into my business, and I'm obviously not distributing the money properly because my family should have it. I mean, there should be a good percentage. I mean, we say 50, but it's really not. It's 40. You know, 10 goes back to sales aid. The other 50 goes back to the product. I mean, if I had a problem asking, I wouldn't be in the Queen's Court of Sales 2 years in a row. So I guess that's my issue. Like, what am I doing wrong?
You're resisting what I'm telling you. Here's the point, and I'm going to be really direct with you, and I'm going to come from love. You do not have near the results that you want. You've got to let go of, I'm asking enough, because my firm opinion on that is that you're not, and it's simply because you don't have the result that you want. And I'm not saying that you're bad, because there's or that you stink, or that you're not a performer, because you're a top performer. You're in a director suit, or you're darn close, but.
Not yet, yeah.
I realize that, I don't doubt that you can sell. You can sell, but my guess is what you're not doing is the recruiting, because that's the piece. Now, that's the piece where you have the asking problem. Now, that's where maybe I need to change my language, because when I say sales, you think product sales, and you're probably great at that. But if you want to get to the level of income where you don't have to worry about money, the answer's in the recruiting. So you've got to elevate the amount of people that you are asking for interviews, and you've got to get more sound in your interviews. And I say that from love, because I so want this for you. I can't want it more for you than you want it for you. But I would definitely continue on the sales. Nancy's going to tell you what to do with the money management. But I'm telling you, you need in the next 3 months 110% focus on asking for interviews.
Yeah, that's probably really true. You're right. The first thing I thought about was just product sales. That's exactly what I thought. And I think that's where my comfort zone is, right? So I know I can sell the products, but I... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the recruiting. Because if you had a team that was as good at sales as you are, you'd be killing it. And you'll teach them how to sell. You just got to recruit them. So, like I said, don't take me wrong. Just take me knowing that I'm coming from love, because I am. But I don't want you to get off the phone and not be addressing the right problem. Because if you're addressing the wrong problem, you're not going to get the answer you're looking for.
So in recruiting, okay, so I focus 110% on that. Is it appropriate while I'm building my team to have them listen in? I don't even know what a good number, like what I should be shooting for. I sit here and I listen to some of the directors, and I see what the Mary Kay marketing plan is. I understand now what I didn't know 3 years ago, where they increase by 10, by 15, by 20, I'm like blown away because I can't even increase by 5, you know? And I start thinking,
I would look at where you are with the amount of, what's the frequency of which you're having a recruiting conversation, start to pay attention to that, and try to just elevate the frequency of the recruiting calls. So you'll start to close more of them by osmosis, but focus on the activity, because the activity you can control.
That's true. And do you think at this point, I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Nancy will go ahead and give you some advice on that with regard to what to do with the money.
Okay.
Did you have a question, though, Karina, before I start?
I was just going to say, I remember you saying that 1 in 5 felt like really, like it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be 1 in 5. And so I wonder, at this point in our coaching, where is it very individual, or do you think we should really be recruiting pretty much every other person that we're in front of?
I don't know that I would say every other, but I would say, man, you should at least be, I think low is 2 out of 5.
Almost every other.
Yeah, 2 out of 5. Yeah, so he's right, almost every other, but 2 out of 5 and – I just don't think it should be 1, because it's a $100 investment.
Yeah.
But a lot of that, too, is, Karina, is you have to start to look at the whole breadth of the whole scope of it. In other words, if you're who you're interviewing as well. Because if you're only interviewing those that don't intimidate you, you're not interviewing your best prospects. Mm-hmm. So you're hurting yourself by not doing the interviews, and you're also hurting yourself by being intimidated by somebody that you might view as extremely impressive and then not approaching them. So that's affecting your ratio as well.
So true, so true.
Yeah, so really look there. Again, just focus on, look there, because that's where it is for you. And then I had Nancy talk, go right ahead. I'm sorry, again, I hope I didn't come off too abrupt, Karina. Again,
not at all, because you made me really think and shift a little bit. I really was, and perhaps that's been my problem, is that I've always been stuck on what I know I can do well, and that's why I'm not seeing the increase, because, I mean, when people look at me and they say to me, one particular director's husband said, Karina, you should be in this too. I almost feel bad. Like, I'm in a place personally where I'm like, why am I not there yet? You know, it's a journey. It's a process.
The recruiting piece.
Sales, thank you.
Got it. You fix the recruiting and you'll crush it.
Thank you.
Yeah, the money.
Okay. So basically what I was going to say was you may very well have a management money problem, but what I want you to consider is Chris's advice first, because think about it this way. Even if you aren't keeping enough percentage of the money because you're not managing it well, let's say you're only keeping 30 to 40% of what you bring in, and so 70 to 60% is getting reinvested back in your business. So that means if you have $5,000 in production, you're keeping $1,500 to $2,000. If you were to bring in $10,000, you'd be keeping $3,000 to $4,000. So you'd still be making more money even if your percentage didn't change by doing more. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is if you should be keeping 50%, then you have to start managing it. You have to start paying attention to where it goes. And the only way I know how to do that, and it doesn't sound very sexy, but it worked for me when I was digging myself out of debt. Sounds like a party.
Wait, you know what? Can I be heard or continue? I'm sorry. Hello?
Are you still there?
I am. Can you all hear me? Because you all just went out.
I can, but I heard a lot of background noise, so it sounded like...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the dinner where everybody was at. I was walking back to see if the children needed to walk back. No, I'm here. I hear you.
Gotcha. So here's what I would recommend. If you haven't gotten the book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, yet, I learned a very simple money management system in there. I mean, it was so simple it involved jars that you stick money into. And that was where I started managing small amounts of money. And so I would set up the percentages that work for your business, follow the system that's in there, and then it does not matter how much you bring in. You know, when I would bring in $100, I would manage that $100. But you have to start managing what you have. I think we always have this illusion that when I make money, then I'll start managing it. When I really start making a lot of money, then I'll manage it. That's not how it works. You manage it now, and you will get more. So we heard a great illustration once where they said, so let's say you take your, you know, your little daughter into an ice cream store, and you get her an ice cream cone, and when you walk out of the store, she drops it. Like the ice cream, you know, she can't really steady her hand, and the ice cream topples off the cone, and there she is, she's crying. But you're a really nice mommy, so you take her back into the store. You know, and on the way back in to get her another ice cream cone, she sees the triple scooper. Look, Mommy, the triple scooper. Now, are you going to get it for her? As a loving mom, you probably want to say yes. But as a wise mother, you would say no. Because if she couldn't handle the single scoop of ice cream and it fell out of her hands, giving her a triple scoop would be like setting her up for failure.
Yeah.
So when we don't manage a small amount of money that we have, God is not going to bless us with more because we haven't shown ourselves to be a good steward of what we have. You start managing what you have, more will come your way. And that's exactly what I started doing. I started managing every small check. If I got $70 into my business, I would divide it up into my different accounts. So that's what I would recommend on the practical side.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was just thinking the same thing you were thinking there, Nancy. I was like, well, God's not going to give me blessings if I can't handle what I've got. That's true. That's so true.
He'd be saying,
It's crazy how we just need to hear somebody else say what we already know.
Exactly.
Oh, well, thank you, guys. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to mute out now. And I just want you to know, because I'm going to mute out, and I won't speak to you for a little while until you're back from your trip, but I did look for you all at seminar. I even ran into, talk about image of increase. I'm like, I'm a director. Yeah, right. So I ran into the director's booth thinking that you all at Insights were there, and I couldn't find you, so.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we weren't
there. Yeah,
we missed being there.
Say again?
I said we missed being there for sure.
Yes, yes. But thank you, guys. Thank you for everything.
You're welcome, Karina. Thank you. Okay, does anybody else have a question? Or are we going to let Karina be the last question of the entire program?
Well, it's Mary Beth again. You said earlier.
Hi, Mary.
Hello.
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 Oh, I think
we
have
two questions. Oh. Go ahead. I guess somebody beat me. Go ahead.
Well, it's Mary Beth. I just wanted to say I went into Nook, and you can get. God Works Through Faith for $5.34 on your Nook.
Fantastic. Okay.
Okay. I'll unmute or mute
no
or
problem.
Whatever.
No problem.
I'm
for
gone.
Sharing.
Bye.
That's great. Okay.
Hi, I have a question from earlier in the call.
Sure. Who is this?
This is Jennifer Fountain.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hey there. When you were talking about the email marketing, you said that you tested out different subject lines with
correct.
Your email list. And I just wonder, could you touch upon just how that process would go? I mean, is it on one email campaign you send a certain subject line to like 20% of the list and a different one to or is it on separate campaigns
other? Yeah, great question. You can do it either way. You can do a split test where you send the same email to half your list with one subject line and a second email with a different subject line to the other half of the list and then see which one opens better. Or sometimes just look at our e-zines, which is our newsletter. Just over time, we get types of subject lines. You've got background noise.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Oh, this did I answer your question?
I think so.
Okay.
I've never tried anything like that before.
Yeah, you can do a split test, or like I said, over time we just look and we see which ones seem to get the most response. For us, it always seems the ones that are the most controversial, quite frankly. I'll give you the top three lately. Goal setting is useless, so that's pretty controversial because most people believe in goal setting. The one where I used people's first names, so it would say, like, Jennifer, it's all your fault. And then last week I sent out one that said why women business owners are so broke. And all of those got over a 20% response open rate, which is fantastic. So it seems that the more controversial you are or the more, like, abrupt or shocking it is what we write, the more people open the emails.
A great tip. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and then I think it was Pam. Was it Pam's voice I heard?
Hi.
Hi,
hello?
Pam.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a general question.
Okay.
In the context of this program, Think Pink and Grow Rich, what two or three or maybe just the most important things should we become a master at to really move our business forward the fastest?
Wow. What a phenomenal question.
I can shoot.
Oh, Pam, you might have actually stumped us.
Oh.
No, I know what Chris is going to say.
Yeah, I would say the most important thing for you all to learn is how to be effective recruiters.
Yep, I knew he was going to say
okay.
that.
Yep, because that's the fastest way to grow your business and increase your income is through bringing on a team. So if you can learn how to recruit, you'll knock it out of the park.
And mine sort of dovetails onto his, but it's a little bit more general.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you have to become masters of recognizing your comfort zone and call yourself on it when you're not getting out of it. You have to become comfortable with getting uncomfortable. Because if you aren't willing to be aware of the fact that you're staying in your comfort zone and not pushing yourself, then you stay where you are. When I look back over the years I was struggling in business, I think I was lacking awareness that I wasn't willing to do what was uncomfortable, whether it meant working longer, harder, calling people, asking for the sale, asking for a referral, asking people who had previously said no. All those things were outside my comfort zone. I would say
That's
if you would
me.
Do those things after getting outside your comfort zone and master the recruiting, he's right. You'd be unstoppable.
Okay. Thank you. And I just wanted to say that I got a ton of stuff out of this program, and I'm so glad I signed up for it.
Thank you. Well, it was our pleasure delivering it.
Thank you.
Can I ask one quick question before you all hang up?
Yeah.
You just want to be the last one, don't you, Karina?
No, I really don't. But I thought, I was like, oh, gosh. But I did want to ask about, I really don't. I wanted to ask about it. I had this on my heart, so I thought I might as well, or I'll be upset that I didn't ask. When you have team members that say to you that they want to move up in leadership, they say to you every single time you're any type of, in my case, in any type of small team meeting, that she wants to be a director, and then she does absolutely nothing to support that. At what point, I feel like sometimes I'm very cold with people because I really want to say, you've got to be kidding me. Like, if you're not willing to do the work, you can't expect, right? But I also understand it has to come from a place of love and to be able to coach them and be supportive. But what can I say, to get her to a place where she's either cognizant of what she's doing or just to move her in a place where she's okay with where she is
mm-hmm.
without having to, you know what I mean?
Well, here's what I know. I know that most people want success. I mean, most people want success. Most people want to be making six figures. But most people are not willing to do what it takes to have success. And so what that leaves is a lot of frustrated people. They want, but they don't want to do. And that's what I would point to her, or that's what I would point out to her, is that I get it, you want to be a director, but your actions have to correlate with your desire. If not, all you're ever going to have is frustration.
Okay. The irony with this particular individual is that she doesn't seem to be frustrated or bothered. And I almost look at her like, you got, like, why would you even want growth and things like that if you don't, like, it doesn't seem to faze her. So I guess I'll take that approach with anybody who says they really want to move up, but
yeah.
They're just not.
But here's the thing, if it doesn't faze her, it shouldn't faze you.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
I always say match your effort or your energy with her effort.
No, that's the very truth. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank
All
right.
You. Okay. Any other questions?
All right. It's officially time for Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Yeah, we're celebrating tonight with some Ben and Jerry's ice cream, the end of the program. We
and
wish
we,
you were all
we
here
say,
with us,
when
too.
When we say celebrating, it's not because we don't like being here with you, but
no.
It's like instead of looking at it in a bad way, we choose to look at it We're hoping that you all don't view it as an end. We're hoping that y'all view it as a new beginning, because you can take the information that you've learned and still have access to and really create something new and something beautiful in your life and in your experience. So we're going to celebrate that with Ben and Jerry's, because we love that. We're what we call chunk spelunkers, which means that we dig into the ice cream and look for the chunky pieces.
Absolutely.
And we celebrate every time we find one. So if you all are chunk spelunkers,
like
in our honor, go out and get some Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
We
and
give you permission
even, we give you permission to have at it. So
yeah.
We really appreciate all of you being here with us. Keep your eyes on your email. I'm sure we'll be doing more programs, and we will have the Think and Grow Rich program as a product in a box with CDs that you can have and then share with your teams so that
absolutely.
We can pay all this information forward. So thanks again to all of you for being here, and have a great one.
Yeah, we've loved being with you. I'm a little reluctant to hang up. I feel like I'm hanging up on my sisters or something like that. But I know that we're going to see each other again. I know that we're going to be in touch. Keep your eye on your emails, because we do have a couple things coming up for you between now and September. And then always feel free to reach out to us by email if you need something. And again, we'll have this information boxed up for you into an easy-to-access CD program. So
yep.
It's been wonderful being with you, and until next time.
Yeah, and just one more little nugget of what it's going to be, what's coming up, is we have decided we're going to start letting all of you get access to some of the people that are in our industry that are great thought leaders in different areas. So we're going to be bringing in some special guests to teach some of their expertise to all of you. So we'll be introducing you to them, and some of those calls will be led by them. So you'll get their expertise and experience and their perspectives, and they're really thought leaders in the industry. So keep your ears open for that.
All right. Well, everyone have a wonderful night, a wonderful month, and we look forward to being with you again soon.